Welcome, listeners, to a podcast that seeks to ignite the flames of inspiration and empowerment within the ServiceNow community. I'm Farah Wells, your host and the director of Linking Humans, the number one global partner for ServiceNow recruitment. Join us on this journey as we venture deep into the world of ServiceNow leaders, discover the very essence of their motivations and the unique mindset that paved the way for their remarkable success. So I have a real pleasure in introducing Darius. Now, he has been a ServiceNow Certified Master Architect since May 2021. In total, he has 30 years of experience in IT. He co-founded Aspendians in the early days of ServiceNow and has a total of 14 years experience with ServiceNow. So welcome to the show, Darius.
Yeah, thank you for willing to talk to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, for anybody that doesn't know you, I think it'll be just amazing just to hear your background journey, how you first got introduced to ServiceNow, and how you've achieved such great success reaching your current position that you have right now.
Well, you know, originally, we are four of us, and two of co-founders of Aspendians, they were working into the support area or like early days ITSM management tools, which were usually like in-house, and in the company we were working all together, they have been asked to deploy some ITSM supporting team for the internal IT. And this external system was too expensive for the internal use. So the CIO of the company asked one of our colleagues to find something on the cloud. And he just made a quick research and found ServiceNow, which at the time was, I think, like 10 million of revenues and, 40 employees. And proposed to deploy it. So he implemented, deployed the ITSM solution for the quite big company in 2 weeks. And at the time, the ServiceNow started to have to acquire some customers worldwide, especially in Europe, but they haven't had any supporting organization here. And we just thought that it would be the good opportunity to create some company and help them. And we proposed our support. They agreed. And this is how it started. So, funny story is that we were four working on the daily jobs. And then, it was just an unknown area for all of us. So we were leaving our regular jobs and going on, moving to our startup one by one during, I think, 1 year, every 3 months, another founder just switching the job. And I was the last one, actually, the most careful.
Amazing. Wow. And you just described, obviously one by one, you moved from secure jobs to startups, that must take, such a strong kind of mindset to kind of go, this entrepreneurial spirit to kind of go, let's take this chance. How did you build that confidence to kind of say, yes, this is what we're going to do now?
Well, I think the, as we were four, some of us are more entrepreneurial spirit. Some of us were more managers, father of family way of handling the risks. I was the technical side, and as I said, because I was the last one, my risk taking was quite low because it was already a running thing. So I just switched to help them. And then, interestingly, our daily jobs were necessarily well paid, better paid with what we can afford in the start in the service now. So it was during this period when we were joining the company one after another, it was undoubtedly some loss of a revenue. Okay, and at the end, after a few months, or even yeah, a few dozen of months, one year and a half later, we decided to recognize this risk taking, and we were paid a kind of compensation for those who left, you know, early, then gradually, just to compensate the loss of the revenues. Well, I was the last one. I had zero.
Oh no!
Yeah, because oh, you know no. The risk was quite small at the time. So, but it was. We tried to be fair between us.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, obviously, when you joined, when you sort of joined the founders, like, what was the goal? What was the vision of the company? Like, what did you want to achieve?
It's a tricky one because one of us had a vision to build a software company, and the software company, the development is quite expensive. So and you know, capital consuming. So originally, as a source of financing this or the money, we decided to create this around the ServiceNow oriented company, and then develop this one. And then with enough money, we decided to invest into the software. So the ultimate goal was to create a software company and just make money with a software, having this servicing company or integrator company as a source of revenue, but not the goal itself. Well, it came out that the software which we developed, TeamBook, wasn't that successful. It was generating some revenues, but it was really nothing compared to what we could generate from the ServiceNow oriented services. And this chicken giving the golden eggs was actually the ServiceNow world and not this TeamBook stuff. So you know, it's the TeamBook still exists. It's owned one of our colleagues who used to work as a CFO for Aspidians, and he purchased the whole company and trying to develop the features, but it's not a big company, it's just small player.
Would you recommend going down this path?
Yeah, so this is quite interesting because I'm now into the big corporation, and I'm a technical architect doing my technical stuff. The most entrepreneurial spirit guy of us, Michel, he's still on this market. He's still creating some new companies, and he's still publishing some interesting articles or blogs on the LinkedIn. And recently, one of them was explaining that the ServiceNow, with an ambition of a ServiceNow to be like a, you know, 10 billion revenues company, will generate the huge market of the services. And the number of partners in this market is worldwide currently about 2000, knowing, and in his blog he is comparing the number of partners with the ecosystem of SAP, ecosystem of Salesforce, and you can see that the number of partners in ServiceNow is still much lower compared to the size of the market than ServiceNow. So There is still a lot of place for the new partners, I mean, it depends. Some people are just like a startup spirit and prefer to join the small structures. Some of them are just big company beast, and they prefer to go to the big organizations. But nevertheless, there is also after this first phase on the ServiceNow market, then the big players like a Big Five purchased a lot of partners, and they created their own divisions or departments specialized their own ServiceNow. There are the smaller boutique which are created, and sometimes independent, sometimes few consultants working together, but they can federate. And for example, Michel, it's now creating the structure which federate the small boutique of ServiceNow services to be able to present the whole structure as a big force of consulting, and being able to answer some big RFPs, because the big company works to work with the big companies. But the place is still there. The opportunities, I believe, the opportunities are still there.
That's fantastic. And for anybody that wants to kind of get that opportunity, obviously, you know, you've been in the industry for so long. Do you see any gaps in the market where you think, you know, guys, there's a real gap, you know, here, and there's a real opportunity there? Like, do you have any kind of advice on that respect?
I think there is still the ServiceNow job market is like white iron. I mean, it's really hot, and there is no one. So the gap is probably mainly in quantity of available competency or available consultants worldwide, compared to what are the ambitions of a ServiceNow. If you know that $1 of a license of a subscription or a ServiceNow generate around $3 to $4 of revenue in services, so you can imagine that 10 billion, it will generate 40 billion, right? And it's the mathematics are quite simple. I mean, if you have one consultant costing a worldwide average $500, working for 200 days, it's about $1 million of a revenue per year, right? But now, if you take this 40 billion and you divide this by the million, it gives you what, 40,000? I think something like this. So which is quite big number, right? And I still don't think we are there. I mean, the ecosystem it's growing. Like, for example, the CMAs, which, you know, certified master architects, were supposed to be on the top of this pyramid of certifications in ServiceNow. Originally, we supposed to be only like 200 worldwide. Now we are over 200, and I think the ecosystem is growing. It will be growing like this, so, you know. But it's the people skillful in ServiceNow, it's still missing. There is also another aspect, is that there is a technicality of the ServiceNow, so, you know, which is not rocket science. I mean, it's not an AI algorithm. It's much simple. It's a JavaScript and some event-driven platform, but there is also some functional areas with ServiceNow is expanding, and the interesting aspect is to have someone who is able to talk, for example, in the case of HR, to talk with an HR specialist. I mean, you working in HR, you know that you have some specific vocabulary. And then to translate this into the features or technical aspect of a ServiceNow and to be able to tell technical consultants what has to be done and how it should be done. Guys having a double competency, they are needed in every single integrator, like ecosystem, like SAP or Workforce, Salesforce, Workday, all these big players, they are still requiring this double competency, because without this, you have to have someone who translate the business needs into the technical requirements.
Traditional IT sense, someone might think, well, that's just a business analyst role, which has been around for a long time, where they kind of sit in between the business and IT. And, and when you said, speak to HR and understand the language, I think the language is just very simple English, and that's being able to then translate that into what we actually want from a system. So, absolutely. And, for somebody that wants to kind of step into the ServiceNow world, would you then say this is a really good career kind of avenue that they should pursue?
I still strongly believe it. Yes. I mean, yeah. It's, I used to be the certified data warehouse SAP, business warehouse consultant. And compared to this, the ServiceNow technology itself is just pure joy to implement. I mean, I'm probably the geek, that's why I'm telling this, but honestly, I have the application development background, and all the hassles, all the issues which you can face as an application developer, with translations, with different aspects of application development, they are taken care of. I mean, everything is in the platform, and you can just concentrate on what this application supposed to solve as a business problem, instead of how you will be doing this from technical point of view, because everything is there. So it's undoubtedly, I believe that this is still the market which will keep going. Now there was the tag a few years ago coming from ServiceNow, saying that on the one side of a corporation or the companies, you have a client acquisition, so the CRM tools, right? On the another side, you have everything what is production, so the purchasing, mainly the ERP system, and in the middle, you have kind of gray zone where everything is managed by the Excel files and the emails, and this is where ServiceNow comes to automate the things. Okay, so they are not replacing CRM, so they are not competing with a Salesforce, they are not competing with SAP or Microsoft Dynamics, they are just trying to automate these things which are usually taking dozens of emails and all this stuff, and it never worked, or it's slow. They came to implement this, and now the new tagline is the ServiceNow is a platform of a platforms. So they try to integrate all the systems, the CRM, the production, the everything into one connected kind of business service platform, which orchestrates everything and link the things together into the company. So meaning that ServiceNow is trying to place the whole solution as a backbone of IT and of the big corporation. And as IT became in the recent years, I mean, very important, like a main tool, meaning that if we're going this direction, the ServiceNow will become more and more important. So, you know, taking more and more place and weight into the overall solution. So, yeah, this is definitively some domain which will require the new professionals, new people, and this is a good good path, I think.
And you know, that, like, it's amazing. Like, you know, there's a future, you know, and that's the thing for anyone that's looking or thinking of joining, you know, the ServiceNow space. You know, there's so much opportunities, which is amazing. So,
yeah.
You know, just kind of going back to your CMA, right? So, you know, for those that perhaps, let's say, who've done their CTA or, you know, who are aspiring to be CMA qualified, like, what do you think? Do you recommend it? Is it worth it?
Well, it's, you know, in my cohort, so the training is organized by batches. So you have like a three cohorts. So the group of professionals which have applied and have been qualified by ServiceNow, because you know it's you have to be applied, you have to be qualified. You cannot just pay the participation. It's about 30-40 person, and in my cohort the guys were coming from the different areas. So you know, it was a pre-sales, it was a technical guys, but mostly the pre-sales or the business analyst or solution consultant, how we call them. And for me personally, there is a quite a huge aspect or huge weight given by the creator of a course to the presentation skills, and especially in the case of virtual remote presentations. You know, it's we had even a webinar with Chuck Tomasi, who is now the ServiceNow webinar guru, and he explained us actually his own setup at home and how you should behave. I mean, it was really interesting. We have the same set of sessions with the guy who is a professor of business communication at Stanford, and he also gave us few lessons about how to present, how to prepare the presentation, you know, avoid to be boring and all this stuff. And this one, this side actually for me was like an open minder. I mean, open, yeah. You know, it was really interesting. Yes. Because
what was the top tips that were the top takeaways you took from there?
Well, I remember, for example, how to manage the stress before, when you start the presentation, with a bottle of a cool water, who you know, you just cool the hands, I think the head. Was also about the briefing, you know, like the sales guys, you know, from they are also using like a box briefing. When you expire counting four, you stop counting four, you expire counting four, and you stop counting four, and you if you do this few cycles, actually you automatically you come down. So the things like this, for example, the presentations, you know, there is the best practices about a PowerPoint presentation, that, you know, you should not have more than three topics on the page and all this stuff. I mean, nobody is doing this, right? But it's really what is important. But the funny story about how his main advice for the PowerPoint presentation was to do it kind of James Bond style. You know, when the movies of James Bond start, right? There is a quite a high pace, challenging scene, and then you start to have you know, music and who is playing and all this stuff, right? And his vision to make an interesting presentation was exactly like this. So you know, you just not starting about who you are, what you will be doing this, but you just push to the audience some shocking figures or shocking facts or whatever. I mean, just a few phrases. Then you present yourself, and then you explain what you will be doing, and yeah, so it was funny.
No, that's actually amazing, because, you know, I can see how it totally makes sense, because, you know, you go in, you watch a presentation, and it's like, boom, you're hit with something really interesting. It captures your attention.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's like, okay, who is this person? Let me hear more. So, yeah, I love it. So,
funny enough, we were doing all like this, yeah.
Yeah, very good, very good. How have the customers taken to it? Like, I assume you've put it into practice, right? So how has it been taken when you've done it in real life?
Well, you know, it's usually when you have something is working, you don't have any remarks, right? And no one is telling you, oh, well, it was great, the presentation. It's just mainly when it's wrong. So, yeah. And I use it a few times, and it went well. You have to avoid, especially as a technical person, you have to avoid to talk technical vocabulary to non-technical people, and don't try to be too detailed. And stay in a certain level of, to the audience, right? Not try to push too much information. Just because human being, it's a 15%. You remember 15% of our conversation or what we will be, you will be presenting. So it's better to talk slowly and have a few information, very, very little information on the slides, instead of having, two pages A4 packed into one slide and try to have a high pace. Well, it's not my case, because anyway, the English is not my mother tongue, so I stay.
The English is perfect.
I stay
It's
slow.
Amazing. No, do you know what? That is amazing tips that I think anybody can use, regardless of what position that they're in. You can even use it in life, right? It's like, yeah, if you want to get something in life. So yeah, I think that's amazing. What advice would you give to people that can be slightly nervous? You know, that they find it uncomfortable, kind of talking in presenting to people. Like, what advice would you give to those guys?
Be prepared, I think. So especially, for example, the CMA, so the Certified Master Architect course is finishing by the exam, which is just you present, you have a 3 hours to present, to make a presentation or prepare the presentation. Obviously, it's on some template, so it's mostly prepared already, and then you present this to the three people, which plays the roles of C-levels guys, CIO, project director, and enterprise architect, and you try to present this. And myself, not being an English speaker, the part which has not modified, so the part which because this template contains some part where that you will be talking about, the organizational configuration management, or about the methodology of a ServiceNow, so you know. But I scripted this, so I just write it down, and by knowing what you will be talking about next, it's you are not nervous. You just you can handle the answer. You handle the questions when they come. You can answer, but you know more or less. And during the the course, you should not be worried in the sense that there is a lot of sessions which you repeat. There is your colleagues. You just get to used to now. Depends on to whom you present as a, who you have as a mentor, who you have as a colleagues. It could be more or less successful, but usually you could practice this. You have your what you will be delivering as a final review will be probably 10th or 15th of a sessions which you done during this month of training. And it should be fine. But someone helped me just explaining that she wrote down what she should talk about, and I did it as well. It there is a two good I think sides of this that you can use a more elaborated English than usually when you are just talking out of out of the blue. And then you know what you are talking about next. So it's it was and just don't panic. I mean, I had the problems. I have my iPhone wasn't working, so I had to I lost the timing because my network just didn't work, and I had to reconnect. And despite this, I passed. So don't be desperate. I mean, if I could, you too.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. And and obviously, after, do you guys all keep in touch? Like the all the people from all the CMAs? Yeah. How is that community?
So it's there is a multiple channels. We have a still the WhatsApp group of our cohort, and it's quite active. I mean, sometimes some of us has a problem, so they ask. And now as the I think the half of our cohort is working for ServiceNow now, so they have also the internal sourcing and the information. But and on top of this, or aside this, we have an alumni organization, which is, there is the part where there is the dedicated part of Now Learning website managed by ServiceNow, where we have access to all the sessions of all the cohorts played. Since the beginning, and there is a blog, so there is the additional source of information which is not in the public domain actually. And it gives us because one of the main parts of a CMA courses is that the product owners from the ServiceNow they come to present what will be next. Okay, so we present the product and then what they plan to do next. And this it's evolving from release to release, but as a alumni of a CMA I can go and check what has been presented on the last cohort in Japan. I mean APG, the cohort Asian one, and have a the later version of what they plan to develop in the Washington or the further releases.
Absolutely. And what was your journey towards CMA, like on the certification program? Like, what did you do? Did you obviously you started with CSA, and then what was your journey to get to it?
No, it's, I mean, it's well defined, it's well defined process, because they announce actually the opening of a position. Then you have a dedicated page when you apply. The application contains actually the project on which you are working, the customers, and your certifications. You have to have a minimum five certifications, and your experience, why you want to be CMA. And then it comes, few weeks later with answer if you have been qualified or not. So yes, it was early days. So it's I think I was like in the third cohort or something. So
Oh, wow.
it was a lot of very good people willing to do it. And well,
Yeah.
I had the chance to do it, but it's still a lot of now, for example, the CTA is slightly different, because in CTA I think you have no qualification, you have just sign in. And it became quite challenging, because the slots are gone usually like in 5 minutes from the beginning. Yeah, I mean it's worse than the race around the Mont Blanc. I mean it's or it's comparable. It's comparable. It's like 3 minutes and 2,000 slots gone. So here is the slots are less than 2,000, but they are also quite quickly.
Fantastic. And just reflecting back on your own sort of career journey, what advice would you give to young ServiceNow professionals? Any sort of top tips that you'd give them?
ServiceNow actually is very versatile technology or platform, and there is a lot of how to say a lot of I mean the same thing can be implemented in the multiple way, but just keep your curiosity intact, meaning that there is no good way or bad way to do the things. Now ecosystem of a ServiceNow is so huge, then you can practically find the answer to whatever question you have about how to do this or how to do that. And sometimes the answer which you found, which you can find on the internet, is not necessarily 100% matching what you need, but with you can just adjust, and implement this. And I think the clients, they are searching the certified guys. So go and as much as you can through say micro certifications and certifications. Some of them are free of charge. Some of them are interesting because they are on demand. So you are not obliged to attend the class, virtual or physical. You just go and on your own pace. They give you the instance in which you can practice the things, and you go and make a additional bricks to your wall, to your treasure. And it's in some point you will have a big pile of certifications, and this is something which you can present to your employer or future employer or whatever you're searching for.
My final question, okay, if you could go back in a time machine and talk to your 21-year-old self, what advice would you give him, right? And this
Yeah,
could be totally non-work related,
yeah,
yeah.
but Farah, it's a tricky one, because at 21 I was in Poland. The communists was still there, and I was yeah I was actually I wanted to be the engineer who can leave the decent life just doing engineering work. And at the time, the communism, it wasn't at all this way. So, you know, it was one of the main reasons which pushed me out from Poland in 89, so just before the Berlin Wall collapsed, just to have this, I mean, to have the life when honestly, if I could or I should do this again, I would. Yeah, it's well, I think I don't regret at all.
Yeah.
So advice, I don't really have an advice. I don't say that I did the things in the perfect way, but well, perhaps one of the advices is, you know, it's I was really very, I'm still quite technical, right? And you know, mathematics, physics, and the human aspect of the relations wasn't in my scope or comfort zone. I should probably read less science fiction books and more like psychological thrillers, or you know, the Russian Tolstoy, or you know, the things explaining more about the human soul than, you know, about the rockets flying from one galactic to another. How we used to say, the perception is reality.
Yeah.
And the human being, you know, everything is based on perception. So when you, it's especially when you go through technical career like myself, don't neglect the human relations. You know, it's because sometimes I still have a very good vibe with a technical guys, but the others not necessarily. So I mean, I became much more social friendly than I used to be, but probably that would be my advice. Yeah, just keep this side also important.
I really truly love the fact that you say, like, you know, there's no regrets, you know, so I think it's wonderful. But yeah, thank you so much, Darius. It's been amazing to speak with you. I'm sure that all the listeners, you know, there's been some really inspirational moments throughout. And it's a huge thank you to you for taking the time out to speak with us today.
Thank you very much to you, Ursula.
Great. Thank you.